This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. When he was 19 years old, Kevin Hines jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, believing that he was taking his own life. Somehow, he survived and now is an advocate for suicide prevention and treating mental illness. Hines will be the featured speaker for the annual Respecting Differences program in Kalamazoo. He will speak at Chenery Auditorium Thursday morning. Hines will also address the Kalamazoo Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services breakfast on Friday. Kevin Hines, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let me begin with this question. The Golden Gate Bridge is a very popular place for people to commit suicide. And we don't get to very often ask someone why they chose it. In this case, we have someone who tried to commit suicide there and thankfully survived it. But what made you pick the Golden Gate Bridge as the place that you thought you would end your life?
Well, I did. I attempted to die by suicide because I was in pain. I was struggling mentally with a very severe form of bipolar disorder. And I ended up on that bridge because I heard voices in my head telling me that I had to die, telling me I had no other option, that I was a horrible human being, and that I was a burden to all who loved me. This is part of dealing with psychosis, really of any kind. And when your brain is having a bit of a malfunction, when you're the most powerful organ in your body is suffering, the rest of you will go. And if you don't get treatment, you'll end up where I was. Not just that, but if you get treatment and you don't follow it, you can't get better. And I was in treatment per se. I had a psychiatrist, I was on medications, but I was taking them haphazardly. I was taking them while binge drinking into blackout on the weekends. I was in a very dangerous place in my life. And the worst part of all of this is that I hid the majority of these things and the severity of the illness from my family. They knew I was having a hard time. They knew I was seeing a doctor because they brought me to him. They knew that I was taking medications. They didn't know that I was not taking them adequately, not taking them with 100% accuracy. They didn't know that I was binge drinking on the weekends until blackout. And they didn't know the dangerous place I had come into because I was ashamed to tell anyone of my suicidal ideations for fear that they would lock me up and throw away the key. And that's really all those things together led me to go to that bridge. And because I had learned that it was an easy place to die, it's a 4-foot rail. You know, I've always said a 12-year-old kid who's tall enough could trip over. And for people like me in that kind of dire situation, it's a calling card. And I will tell you this, is the most important part of all. It was a mistake. The greatest regret of my life.
You mentioned hiding this from your family. If you had been more open and honest with them, do you think that they could have helped you and stopped you from getting on the Golden Gate Bridge and attempting to kill yourself?
100%. I mean, can you imagine if instead of my father, saying he wanted to hang out with me that day and me saying, okay, I'll see you later at 6 p.m. tonight, knowing that I wouldn't. Instead of that, if I just said, Dad, I don't know what's going on. I'm having these thoughts and feelings. I don't know what to do. Can you please help me? He would have brought me to a hospital. I would have been saved at least for that day. You know, one of the things I've learned in suicide prevention in the work I've done and been a part of is that when you ask the question, when you ask someone the question, are you having thoughts of suicide? The statistical analysis is that the majority of people suffering like I did or in some way like I did will tell the truth if they're having those thoughts because all they want is for someone to see their pain. And when I was on the bus going to the bridge, the thought that ran through my mind was if one person comes up to me and says, are you okay? Is something wrong? Or can I help you? Which is a big part of my speech. I would tell them everything. The question always remains is would anybody have listened? And this is very common among suicidal ideations in people. They make these pacts with themselves. And sometimes these pacts can form in things like, if one person does this, I won't do that. Also, the pact can be the opposite. The pact can be, if one person does this negative thing, I'm going to die. So these pacts are completely based upon irrational thought, which is where suicidal minds bring a person to irrational thought. Did all my family hate me and think I was a burden? No, they all loved me. Do all my friends want to not be my friend anymore? No, they cared about me. But all of these irrational things were going through my mind because my brain was having a hard time. And in this country and around the globe, we have a huge problem with thinking that our brain is separate from our body. that our brain is not like the rest of our organs with functions and abilities. As a matter of fact, it controls everything else.
What do you think are some other misconceptions that people have about mental illness, bipolar disorder, perhaps in particular, and perhaps maybe the similarities between treating the mental disorders and physical disorders? What are some of the big misconceptions that you find people say, maybe even to you?
Well, let's talk about one of the biggest ones. I travel the country and the globe now. I talk to school-age kids in every level, every scholastic level. One of the things I find the most daunting is that when I go somewhere like this to a school of any kind, whether it be university, college, or grade school, I will have someone come up to me or someone's come up to me and say, I have this brain illness that I've been diagnosed with, but my parents don't believe it's real. So they go to their counselor in school, and they maybe go to their psychologist or psychotherapist who validates their experience, and their parents say it's nonsense, or their family say it's bull, you know what, or their people around them tell them to get over it, snap out of it, and move on.
I want to go back to your suicide attempt for a moment. Last summer, I had the opportunity to go to San Francisco and was on the Golden Gate Bridge, rode a bike across it. It was an amazing experience. And I have to tell you, having looked down from up there, it seems like that is a pretty foolproof way to commit suicide if you jumped off of it. How did you survive?
I'm a man of faith, I say, but for the grace of God. I will tell you physically how I survived. When I went over the rail, a woman saw me go over the rail and she was driving by. She saw me at the point that I went over, she was driving by. She called her friend on her cell phone in the Coast Guard. The only reason they got to my position was in the time less than I had set in hypothermia and drowned was because of that woman. I know this because she happened to be one of the best friends of my high school band teacher. When I was in the water, bobbing up and down the water, trying to stay afloat but not doing well at it, without the use of my legs at that point, I had shattered my back. I had shattered 3 vertebrae in the shards-like class. In the water, something brushed by my legs, and I thought, this is ridiculous. I didn't die off that bridge, and of course now a shark's going to eat me. That was my initial thought. But it didn't bite me. It just kept circling beneath me, in essence, bumping me up. At this point, I was no longer wading in the water. I was floating atop it because of this thing keeping me buoyant. The only time this thing left my from beneath me was when the Coast Guard boat murmur arrived behind me, and these gentlemen pulled me out of the water. I was on a show called Primetime Live with a man named John Quinones. He does that show, What Would You Do, that national show, international show. And people wrote in when the show went viral online. People wrote in from all over the world after the show happened. And in the show, I mentioned that I thought there was a shark beneath me. And a man named Morgan wrote into the show, and he said, Kevin, this is, I'm paraphrasing here. He said, Kevin, I'm so very glad you're alive. I was standing less than 2 feet away from you when you jumped. It has haunted me until this day. No one would tell me if you lived or died until he saw that show where I was doing a suicide prevention campaign. He said, by the way, Kevin, there was no shark. It was a sea lion. And the people above, looking down, believed it to be keeping you afloat until the Coast Guard boat arrived behind you. If that's not a miracle, I don't know what is.
You had to heal physically, of course, from what happened from jumping off the bridge. But also there was mental healing for you as well. What was more difficult?
The mental healing by far was more difficult. You know, healing an arm, healing a leg, healing a back, all that takes is time and surgery and a few staples in your side. Healing mentally was the hardest part. Because there's another misconception. You don't just go through something like this, get better, and you're all better and it's over. No, I have a mental illness, a brain disorder. Okay, every day I live with this. Every day I struggle with this. Every day the symptoms I had when I first started, paranoia, delusions of grandeur, dark and deep depressive lows, hallucinations, both auditory and visual, panic attacks, I have all that stuff on a regular basis. I have chronic suicidal thoughts. So healing mentally is a process for me that I will be going through for the rest of my life. I am, in essence, in recovery forever.
So give us an idea of what it's like for you day-to-day right now to get by and to be successful. I mean, to be someone who travels the country and talks about these things and yet still have bipolar disorder. Obviously, that's always got to be somewhere in the back of your mind that you have a mental illness. So what is day-to-day like for you?
day-to-day life, like, is, like, for me, is a very strict routine of things. So, you know, for me, and this has been scientifically proven that it helps people with mental illness, for me, I wake up at the same time every day. I go to bed at the same time every day, no matter what time zone I'm in. I take my medications at the same time every day, at the same accuracy level every day. I eat my meals most days at the same time every day, or in the same two-hour period. I exercise 3 to 5 days a week, 20 minutes twice a day. What most people don't know, and this is really important, I'll talk about this in my speech in Kalamazoo, is that 23 minutes of continuous exercise a day leads to 12 hours of better mood. So if you work out 23 minutes twice a day, 24 hours of better mood. I have great days. I have great days where the suffering is minimal. And then I have my terrible days where I'm going through all this routine and I still suffer. But this routine isn't so the mental illness goes away. It is so I can cope with the mental illness and so I can beat it every day. So I can wake up the next day, appreciate that I got to wake up, that I've been on this earth one day longer, because I'm a firm believer in the old saying that every day you wake up is a good day. No matter how much pain I'm in, no matter how much I cry, no matter how much I struggle, no matter how many hallucinations I see, I keep going. Because I know now that I deserve to live. And I know now that suicide is not the answer for any problem.
When you think back to the time when you were suicidal, contemplating suicide, and then taking that bus ride to the bridge, what do you wish you had known about, or what do you wish had been available to you to help deal with mental illness?
Well, a couple things. I wish I had known that 1-800-273-8255, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, existed. I had no idea. I wish that someone asked me if I was okay. And I wish that I told my father the truth that morning. I wish I had the gumption and the nerve and the ability to say, Dad, I'm thinking of suicide and I need your help. Because he would have helped me, just like any father would have for their child. And I finally want to say the last biggest misconception that this country is so overwhelmed with right now is that people who have mental illnesses become homicidal maniacs. We see it every other day, it seems, in the media. But what people don't know is less than 6% of people with mental health disorders are actively physically violent towards others, or violent in some way towards others. Less than 6%, yet the media would have you believe that it's the whole lot of us. And that part really burns me inside, because people do not understand that the majority of people living with mental health disorders or diagnosis of mental health disorders in this country and around the globe are actively trying to live a good and positive life, and they're not harming a soul.
Kevin Hines, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Kevin Hines will be the featured speaker for the annual Respecting Differences program in Kalamazoo. He'll speak at Chenery Auditorium Thursday morning, and he will also address the Kalamazoo Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services Breakfast on Friday. Links with more information can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.